Imagine having all, guess all, of your learning challenges solved. With Docebo's Learning Suite, an AI-powered LMS built for enterprise, you can tackle any challenge. You can easily create and manage content, deliver training, and measure the business impact of your programs. Docebo is built for customers, partners, and employees alike, with dozens of integrations to embed directly in the flow of work. Check out Docebo today at docebo.com.
C-Lab, it's where you want to be lab. I'm your host, Adam, and we are doing a C-Lab mini today. So every once in a while, we do mini episodes. We don't do all of the intro and outro. They're not as long, and we're really trying to make it a little bit more informal. And especially what we want to do in these minis is we want to cover pretty common customer education topics that we hear about all the time. So today, let's cover one that we hear actually very often, and that's how do I set up a certification program, and should I even be setting up a certification program? Now, let me call out before we get into this that we have covered this many times on the show. So if this is something that you're really interested in and want to learn more about, we have a few episodes that go into this in way more depth. One is actually a two-part episode. It's called The Myths and Misconceptions of Certification. You can find it in our episode archives. Part one is Dave and I talking about customer education and their relationship to certification programs. Part two is actually an interview with a real-life certification professional talking about his experience in the field. We also have an episode with Debbie Smith, who really knows her stuff when it comes to certifications and has set up multiple certification programs in her time. And that's a great one to check out too. Debbie also wrote an article on LinkedIn that's worth checking out. And in it, she actually outlines the legal basis of certification. It's called 13 Principles for Certification. I think you can find it pretty easily on her profile on LinkedIn, but we'll also throw it in the show notes. Now, I think we need to cover this topic from a couple of ways. The first is, what is actually the legal basis of certification? Like, why are there so many rules out there when you look at really built-up certification programs? And the other is, when you get asked to do a certification program, because typically this is why people are asking this question, like, oh, how do I build a certification program? It's because some executive at your company probably said, hey, we want to build a certification program. Or maybe you said, hey, I want to build a certification program, but you don't really know how to get started. So let's actually tackle that question first, and then we can come back to the legal basis, because I think that might help shed some light on the situation. When you are first deciding whether to make a certification program in the first place, I think it's really important to know actually like what some of this terminology means and if what you're building is a true certification program or if it's something that's similar to a certification program, but not exactly that. And I think the key thing to understand is that just because you have a thing that has a learning path and an assessment and there's a certificate or a badge at the end, that does not necessarily make it a certification. There are people who call those certifications, but when we say certification, we try to be pretty particular about what that term actually means. We're going to be using some legal concepts in this episode as well, and I want to be really clear that I'm not giving legal advice. It's really important to actually consult with your legal team before you set up a certification program or even some of the other things that we're talking about today, just to make sure that you really understand what your company's risk posture is towards certifying or qualifying or assessing people. And especially if you think you're going to go into an actual certification, well, then this is really important. So the difference between a certification, a true certification, and something else that might look like a certification is that the basis of certifications are that they are really used to qualify someone for a job. You can sort of think of it as being similar to a true accreditation or something like that, where, you know, when someone is certified, you are saying as the body who is certifying them that they really can do a certain job. They're kind of authorized to do that job. And I think the best example that we can think of here that's relevant to our world is some of these really high stakes administrator or architect type certifications that you see with pretty complex software. So Microsoft issues a lot of these. Salesforce has administrator certifications, consultant certifications. What are some other good examples? Oracle, IBM. It's some of these very, very complex software products that people might go and actually get hired as an administrator. And therefore, the company hiring them needs to know, hey, do they really know what they're talking about? Do they really know what job they're doing? Or in many cases where there are partner programs or where there are, say, authorized resellers or consulting firms who are doing work related to that software, again, you need to know when you're hiring them to do that work, and they need to know when they're hiring their consultants to do that work, do they actually know what they're talking about? Can they actually do those skills? Are those skills up to date? So in that case, what you want to build is a formal certification program. But let's kind of pick that apart from the intention. The intention is to know whether that person really can do the work that you're certifying them to do. And so that means you really have to make sure that you're designing the certification in a way that that signals that they can actually do that work. And I'm not going to go through all of the different features of a true certification. And I would direct you to Debbie's article if you want the actual Department of Labor guidelines around this. But I think in general, when we think about the guidance that the U.S. Department of Labor gave, that's what they're trying to point at. And these are 13 principles that were published in 1999 by the Department of Labor to say, you know, what are best practices if you're certifying someone. So again, not going to go through all of them, but I'm going to summarize some of the key points. One is that when you're certifying someone and you're assessing them on something, you need to make sure that that assessment is fair and that it's unbiased. So that means that when you're actually going through and creating an exam, you need to make sure that it's very clear, that the language isn't biased, that the language is very clear and everyone knows what you're talking about, and that the assessments are also reliable and valid. So reliable means that if someone takes the exam, or maybe even different versions of exam without studying in between, that the scores between those exams should be consistent. So if you, for instance, are working with multiple test forms or if you're randomizing questions, it can't be that which questions that person happens to draw are so different from each other that they could get a completely different score. So that's reliable. It means if you take the test multiple times with the same skill level, you should get a similar score every single time. That's reliability. Then there's validity. And validity, and here I'm quoting from Debbie, who I think is paraphrasing the Department of Labor, three types of validity. There's criterion-related validity, which means there's a relationship between the test scores and job performance. So what that means is that the higher the score you get on the exam, the higher your job performance should also be by correlation. So the test should actually be testing the right skills to make sure that you can do that job.
Hey, C-Lab fans, listen up, because I've got some great news for you. All over, executives are scrambling to find effective ways to retain customers and increase product engagement. What's the solution? Training customers right from the start. But without the proper tools, that's easier said than done. So let me tell you about Gainsight CE, the game changer in digital customer education. Gainsight CE blends the dynamic nature of digital learning with the importance of meeting those intrinsic human needs that accelerate user adoption, deepen product understanding, and drive customer success, all without sacrificing that personalized attention your customers long for. Say goodbye to time-consuming and hard-to-track one-on-one trainings, endless emailings of PDFs, and help center links. And the best part, your learning program can be embedded seamlessly in your platform. Don't take my word for it. Industry leaders like Walmart, Pipedrive, Glassdoor, and Freshworks choose Gainsight CE for their customer training program. So get started today. Visit gainsight.com/customer-education and tell them Adam and Dave sent you.
Content validity means that we're testing relevant skills for the job. So you actually shouldn't have anything on there that is not relevant to that job. And you sort of have to make sure that the mix of questions as well and how they're being distributed onto the exam mirror how frequently those are going to show up on the job, and that the questions need to relate more towards real world skills and scenarios that someone is going to be displaying to do that job correctly. And finally, construct-related validity means that we're testing what we say we're testing. So performing a job task analysis here is going to help make sure that you are actually testing the types of skills that someone displays proportionally on the job. So even though there's all those different types of validity, you could think of it as, you know, in a nutshell, validity is, are we testing what we say that we're testing? And are we testing the things that actually qualify someone to do that job or not? So that all really goes into exam creation. And this is why often if you are developing a real high-stakes certification where someone is going to get hired or fired based on the results of your exam, or if someone is going to be able to deliver work on your behalf, you really need to know if they know what they're talking about. You really need to make sure that by taking that exam, they're signaling their skills. This is why people go through actual psychometric processes. And if you're going to build a high-stakes certification like this, you really do need to engage with someone who knows psychometric processes. They are called a psychometrician. And they can help walk you through the job task analysis and the setting cut scores and creating effective assessment questions and all that kind of stuff to make sure that your exam is reliable and valid and ultimately fair to the candidate. Now, the other side of this is if you are making sure that the exam is fair, you also need to make sure that people aren't cheating on it, because that's one quick way to really kill both the reliability and validity of your exam. If you have your test questions leaked onto the internet and people can somehow cheat, or they might have, I don't know, like open book materials out on the side somewhere and they're hiding it. So this is why when you get into this high-stakes certification, people are using proctoring. And sometimes that means that they're having people go into exam centers and actually be watched by a proctor there. Increasingly, we see people using online proctoring, and even AI proctoring is becoming a bigger and bigger thing. Now, this is all basically to make sure that people aren't cheating, and so, you know, have therefore would have invalid results, but also that people aren't taking your exam materials and leaking them onto the internet. So a lot of these services that do proctoring or that do exam creation are also helping monitor whether your exam questions leak onto the web. And it's really important to have something like this too if you're going to spend all this time designing an assessment, because if your questions leak, then you have to spend all that time creating another exam. This has happened to me in the past. We had our exam questions leak even though we were proctoring, and we had to go back and rewrite the entire exam. It was super painful. It took a really long time, time that we didn't have. So these are really things that you need to think about if you are creating an actual high stakes certification. And you might be saying now, okay, that's a lot of stuff. And maybe I thought I wanted to do a certification, or maybe my boss came and asked me to do a certification, but I don't think they meant all that. They didn't mean that, you know, someone is actually going to get hired or fired based on the results of the exam. They wanted something more like, hey, we just want to see if you know what you're doing roughly with the software or with this product. And we want you to feel good about it as you're finishing implementation. And we want to give you a badge that you can share. Well, that's great. You can do that. That is a totally legitimate way to do your program if it's more about reinforcing knowledge and skills and not about actually hiring or firing or getting work. Now, my big tip here is you can save yourself a lot of heartache and ambiguity by then just not calling it a certification. There are lots of things that you can call it. You can call it a certificate program. You can call it an assessment-based certificate. If it's based on whether you pass a test, you could call it even attendance-based certification if you get the certificate just by completing the course and not taking an exam. You could even call it something like a qualification or a skill badge. None of these terms really have any legal associations with them. They are not monitored by any, you know, governing body or anything like that. And in general, there's not the perception that if someone earns a badge or a qualification that they've gone through the same high stakes process that a certification that you have with the certification. I'm going to caveat, it's not all about how you name it. And again, this is a good reason to work with your legal team to define when you're launching a program like this, what does it really mean? And how do you make sure you're setting expectations with anyone going through your program about what it means to hold that badge or certificate or certification that you're issuing? Because, you know, if you don't know the difference between a certification and an assessment-based certification, I bet you that a candidate or a learner going through that program also has no idea really what that means or what it signifies. So you need to be really clear about that with your customer at the end of the day. But I think that, like, when we think about the level of rigor and the level of risk, a lot of programs who are doing this for the first time don't actually need to be building a high-stakes certification program. What they really need to be building is something more like a skill badge or a qualification or an assessment-based certificate, because you just don't want to jump through those hoops, and you're not actually using that program to decide whether someone is going to get hired or fired. And a lot of the time, it's because there's not even a real market for the role or for the skill that you're certifying for yet. Until you are at the point where you've got a bunch of people out in the world who are getting jobs as admins for your product or as systems architects for your product, it might not even be necessary to have a formal certification program in place. This episode is brought to you by Intellum. You know Intellum. We've had them on the show before. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that customer education leads to retention and revenue. So the Intellum platform gives you everything you need to educate your customers, partners, and employees on the products and services you sell. They've got a great platform. They've got Evolve as an authoring tool. And with Intellum, put it all together, you can deliver highly personalized and engaging learning experiences, give your customers a single destination for all their learning needs, and create and manage a wide range of content. So check them out today at try.intellum.com/CELABS. That's CELABS. What are some other, I guess, risks that we need to think about? One is, do you actually need to be accredited to issue certifications? Is there some body that is going to check whether or not you are accredited or able to issue a certification? Generally, no. If you're in a field that requires accreditation, like medical or law or something like that, then obviously, please do look into your relevant field there and to see if there's a certifying or accrediting body. But in general, for software, no. Similarly, is the Department of Labor going to come and check whether you are up to their standards? I've not heard of that happening. I don't think the Department of Labor is going around checking whether certifications are reliable and valid. And similarly, if you're outside of the U.S., you're not necessarily going with the U.S. Department of Labor guidelines. You might have other local bodies and regulations to look at with high-stakes certification. But in general, it's not the government coming in and taking a look at your certification program. But what can happen, and this certainly does happen in larger programs, again, in the really high-stakes one where people might actually, say, be getting fired or not be getting work because they failed a certification, what might happen is legal risk. So when we talk about programs being legally defensible, we talk about what happens if a candidate actually tries to bring a lawsuit against your program because they think your certification is improperly designed. Now, this happens. It happens especially for programs that are operating at the scale and the rigor and where the stakes are really that high that someone might be losing their job or having actual, say, like financial damages coming to them as a result of your program. It's less likely to happen for certainly impossible to happen for lower stakes programs where there's no expectation set about the legal standing of the program. So no one's going to sue, like no one can sue you, to my knowledge, for a completely low stakes skill badge or something like that. But I will say that if you have a high stakes certification, but you're not operating at a high level of scale, like you're just not issuing that many of them, it's less likely that you are going to actually get sued. But is that a reason to not go by the book or not actually create a legally defensible exam. My opinion is, if you're going to do a certification, do it right. And if you're not, don't call it a certification. There are programs out there who are doing low stakes programs that they still call a certification. It happens. I see it out there. I think that they're creating some ambiguity by doing that. They probably have language somewhere in their terms and conditions indicating that even though they're calling it a certification, it is not a high-stakes certification, and they're probably trying to set the right expectations with people who go through their programs. But in my opinion, it's better just to avoid it. It's not like the Department of Labor is going to come and strip you of your license or fine you. I think in general, and again, I'm going to get yelled at when I say this, like the actual legal and compliance risk is generally being overstated in most cases, because if you're a small company, it's just rare that you're actually going to get sued for violating legal defensibility standards. It's going to happen when you're operating at a level of scale where there is more actual and tangible risk to candidates because of your certification, or where people are actually being denied work or actually being fired. So if you're Microsoft or Cisco or Oracle or Salesforce or programs like that, yes, absolutely. You got to be alert for that. But if you are starting your certification program for the first time and issuing like 100 certifications a year, the risk that you get sued, it's there. It could happen. But it's a lot lower, right? Because you're just not doing the same volume of programs. So at the end of the day, I still think if it's not really that important to be hiring or firing based on the certification, don't call it a certification. Don't focus on jumping through the hoops to make it legally defensible. Make it a low-stakes skill badge. Make it an assessment-based certificate. Set those expectations with your learners that that's what they're going through. They're not getting an actual certification, but they can still get a shiny badge or a certificate. And you know what? You can still make it instructionally sound, still make sure that the questions that you're asking are reasonably challenging and not just something that can either easily be looked up or where, you know, you're just kind of making them joke questions where option D is Bart Simpson. I think that's a better starting point, finding like reasonably challenging badge programs or assessment programs that are not formal certifications. It's a better starting point for most businesses who are asking this question for the first time. So I think I might have drained that topic. Certainly, again, there are way more nuances. I've grossly oversimplified a few of these concepts. And for that reason, again, this is not legal advice. So if you want to learn more, you should definitely check out Debbie's article. You should definitely check out the Institute for Credentialing Excellence, also known as ICE. They have a lot of the standards and definitions, especially around like what is an assessment-based certificate versus what is a certification program versus what is a certificate of attendance, et cetera, et cetera. And go back and listen to the episodes that I described earlier, the one where we interview Debbie Smith, the one where we talk about the myths and misconceptions of certification. There are lots of resources out there if you really want to get into true certification that can help you get started with this. But I hope if you aren't doing an actual formal high-stakes certification and you're just getting started with something more like an assessment program or a skill badging program, that now you can get out there and do that with a higher level of confidence about how you are getting started. So that's it for me today. Thanks, everyone. Please leave us a positive review if this helped you, and we'll see you in the next one. Thanks, everyone.